Kia ora, I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Today on The Detail, sexual assault is one of our most underreported crimes in Aotearoa at just 8% of all cases. That's right, 8%. Despite all the stories and the high-profile cases, all the awareness-raising efforts in the era of Me Too, well, two campaigners are out to crack it by targeting the perpetrators who are the serial offenders. One of those campaigners is barrister Zoe Lawton.
A legal researcher who has started a blog for victims of sexual abuse in law firms says that she's had a huge response. Zoe Lawton, who set up the Me Too blog 2 days ago, says she wasn't surprised to hear about sexual misconduct complaints involving the leading firm at Russell McVeigh. She says she's already received hundreds of emails of support and dozens of people sharing their stories.
The other is a former journalist, Alison Moore, who headed a Me Too journalism unit at Stuff. They've started a charity called TIKA, meaning Justice and Fairness.
TIKA is, at its heart, a unique piece of tech, a tech platform that will allow people in New Zealand who've been sexually harmed to register as members with a little bit of information about themselves, what happened to them and their perpetrator, and then the system will look for matches. Once a match has been made, now a match is between two or more members who have named the same perpetrator. Once a match has been made, they will be offered legal advice and representation for free.
Okay, so a woman has been sexually assaulted. Can you take me from the beginning? She knows about this TIKA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the next step?
So she will go to the website on her phone or some kind of device, and there will be a web form, as simple as possible, that will look friendly and inviting. She will put a few details about herself, about what happened to her and the context. So was it in school or university? Was it when she was a child and she is now reporting as an adult? You know, was it in a church context or community context, etc.? Mm-hmm. She will also put in some details about the perpetrator, for example, a unique identifier, social media handle.
Mm.
Once they have filled in the form, they will click a box, a terms and conditions box, and this is one of the exciting things about it, that will create a lawyer-client privilege relationship. All of their information will be privileged and will be completely secure and can't be searched.
Okay.
And some people will, you know, in the case of some of our worst perpetrators, might get a match instantly in, you know, a fraction of a second. Other people might be waiting 6 months or more. One thing to mention, which is really important with our system, is when you register as a member of TIKA, you will automatically be offered options for psychological support. Often the first people need is to know where they can go to talk. And then the legal part of our service kind of comes in after that.
Why? Why have you set this up, Zoe?
Yeah, well, as Ali said, we both did specific projects around awareness raising, and we both thought, now that there is so much more public awareness around the prevalence of sexual harm, not only in the workplace but in other contexts, that we'll see an increase in the reporting rates to police
and
other government agencies. Yeah, and we thought, you know, it's been this, you know, as Ali said, we've been tracking it, and then 5-6 years later, those reporting rates are still incredibly low.
8% we're talking about, 8% of sexual assaults.
And that has dropped very slightly and hasn't budged really in a decade. So we were stunned, actually, to learn that from the latest figures. And we thought, you know, why are people not reporting? You know, we know so much more, and conceptually, we are more comfortable these days in talking about these things. The awareness has been raised. Why has that not filtered through into reporting rates? And we know now that it's because there are barriers in the way of survivors, and those barriers still exist. And with Tika, we're trying to set up a way to pull down those barriers, really. So the main barriers are, and we know this from police, number one, people are confused about whether what happened to them is illegal or not. So there's a big legal education piece that we will be taking on to make sure that people know what their rights are. Number two, they feel alone. They feel like it's only happened to them. They feel isolated, often by the perpetrator on purpose, and they feel reluctant to navigate the legal system on their own. They just don't want to do it on their own. You know, anybody can walk into a police station and make a report about what happened to them. There's nothing holding them back technically from doing that, but they don't. And because, these are the reasons why.
Right. Is there also a fear that they won't be believed?
Correct. That is another big one. And thank you for picking that up. You know, behind all those statistics are people who have had to try and make the hardest decision of their lives. And for all those reasons, isolation, lack of understanding of their rights, lack of support to negotiate the legal system, they don't do it. They decide not to. That's what we're trying to change. Yeah.
It's human nature, really, right? Like in any area where you're having a conflict, something's really tough that's happened to you, people don't want to be the first to put up their hand and say, it happened to me. It's just, it's scary. It's overwhelming. And all our reporting systems assume that people will report as individuals and they'll put up their hand. And it's just, it's such a big ask for people in a lot of areas of law, but sexual harm in particular. So the big missing piece of the puzzle is just all these reporting systems assuming that people report as individuals.
Yeah. But so does that mean that the whole Me Too movement was a complete waste? And what you've done, Zoe, with your blog and the work that you've done, the stories, the years of stories, I mean, do you feel like it's ended up nowhere?
No, I don't. And that's because I know how, and I sometimes get a bit emotional about this, I know how much healing was felt by most of the people that I spoke to, and there were hundreds of them, you know, and dozens of investigations that we published when I was at Stuff. Most of those people, the overwhelming majority of them, felt some kind of healing and peace after their story had been published. And certainly Zoe has achieved an enormous amount in the legal sphere. I suppose a little bit unexpectedly at the time, my project also achieved a change in the way media report sexual harm. But it didn't, and it hasn't moved those systemic barriers that victim survivors are still facing. And I suppose this is phase two of our work, if you like.
What has happened? Why didn't you continue reporting?
Well, the Me Too NZ project at Stuff was shut down, and I was made redundant. The decision I had to make after 40 years as a journalist was what to do next, whether to continue as a journalist and be a generalist, or leave journalism and use that to take the conversation forward.
I'm so grateful because this idea has been percolating, you know, since 2018, and I've been talking with Ali about it and a fantastic barrister called Maria Jew KC, who's been a fantastic support. And just, we were talking about this the other day, the shift in just the general attitude since 2018. So I think definitely things have happened a lot slower than I would have liked in terms of progress, but there's no way that we would have been able to set up Tika back in 2018 or 2019. It's taken the level of support for the work that I am doing now is just so much different. Back in 2018, it was so risky and, you know, controversial. But now I think the time has come and the timing is right to set up a big initiative like this.
Because I've looked at the website so far, and we should say that you haven't launched yet, hopefully.
No, we're some months from launching at the moment. We're, like any other charity, trying to raise funds.
What does it take to even set up something like this?
Well, the really exciting thing is the tech part of it. This is an example of tech for good in its purest form. This will be a charity that is there to change the lives of victim survivors of sexual harm. And there are 1.5 million of those in New Zealand. We're creating a completely new tech product that will be using a large language model to create its function, which is the matching members via perpetrator. That part of it is the sexy part, if I can use that word. There's an entirely different audience, Zoe's audience, the legal audience, that get this project on another level.
I guess just at a really basic level, in terms of how the data plays out with perpetrators, it's not a large number of perpetrators each harming one individual. It's a smaller group of perpetrators who pretty much always harm multiple people. And so in the past, they've really benefited from our reporting systems and our legal systems because they know that people don't report. They feel isolated. But what these people do is they've left behind a big trail of evidence, right, with the different people that they've harmed. And so it's a relatively simple concept. We just want to connect the dots and link that all up to the huge advantage of people that have experienced sexual harm. It's just a really different way of providing legal support, providing it to people as a group.
So my understanding is if there is a group of survivors who match the one perpetrator, then they can go to a group action and they get free legal advice. But what if it's just a one-off?
So we really want to have a pathway for those individuals that don't match with someone. So we are having very constructive discussions with New Zealand Police at the moment as to how we might refer that person's file, the information they've given us, directly to police electronically to make the process as smooth for our client, essentially. That's really exciting because at the moment in New Zealand, you can't report sexual harm online to police. So there might be people who, after 6 months, decide, you know, I'm actually comfortable enough now to go forward to police, or it might take them 2 years. It doesn't matter, but we still want to offer them that pathway. So it's not part of our core service, but it's something that we definitely want to offer.
There's strength in numbers. Mm. A significant number of cases that don't get taken forward in the criminal system is because police were unable to advance the case. What we're trying to do is bring groups of people together so that there's more evidence, stronger evidence in those cases, like the Mama Hooch case in Christchurch, for example.
Victims of the brothers behind the drink spiking at Mama Hooch Bar are furious the men continued their predatory behaviour even after the first crimes were reported to police.
During the 5 years it took to get the case to court, the Jazz brothers maintained name suppression while on bail and continued their offending against other women.
Danny Jazz had a complaint laid against him in 2017. He was interviewed by police, but a charge was never laid. He kept offending. It was the year after that his brother Roberto was arrested following his first complainant coming forward. He got name suppression, and he also kept offending.
Brilliant example. 23, I think, young women involved in that case. That case took 5 years for police to put together. It's a bold idea, but we're trying to make that process a little bit shorter.
And you think there are a lot of cases like that around New Zealand?
I don't think in New Zealand we have firm figures on how many perpetrators are creating how much of the harm. Mm. But internationally they do. For example, in the United States, they've done research in the college system, and 90% of all sexual assaults are carried out by repeat perpetrators. And what we know from research dating back to well before the Me Too movement is that we're not so different here. We are likely, more than likely, to see multiple victims of the one person. I mean, I saw it time and time again in my work at Staff. Quite often, I'd have a great story, I'd take it to the lawyers, and the lawyers would say, "Great yarn, Ellie, go and find three more people."
I was wondering about security and privacy and the name and shame thing. What guarantees do you have that we're not going to go down this track?
Well, the project is not a name and shame project. It's completely different from what I was doing in a media space, for example, which, you know, the gold standard for my stories was if I could name a perpetrator. And I could only do that if the story stacked up to a legal level, right? Mm. In this case, all the information that is given to us by our members, by victim survivors, is completely private all the way through the process. The only way that a perpetrator's name could become public would be at the end of a court process when they become public and name suppression is lifted in the normal manner. So, you know, we've had people who've, I guess, slightly misunderstood what we're trying to do, say, oh, you know, they'll be in danger of being sued for defamation. In actual fact, we'll solve that problem for a lot of people because groups come together online, Sharon, already. You know, people talk. There are closed Facebook groups. There are people talking on WhatsApp chains. There are people who in desperation will put perpetrators' names out on social media, and they are at significant risk of defamation proceedings if they do that. If they come and register with Tika, they're hopefully will end up in a situation where a group has been brought together and they have options for outcomes, but they will be completely legally protected.
The only other piece of feedback that we get is some people are a bit concerned about, and I hate this term, and so does Ellie, this whole idea of a witch hunt and people ganging up on a man and false reporting, and they think that the system will encourage or facilitate that. Definitely not the case, because legally and from an information storage point of view, all the clients that register with us that match are all then kept in separate lanes. They're not identified to each other, so they're not tainting each other's evidence. They're not colluding. It's such a rigorous legal vetting process that we'll go through to make sure that if that does happen, you know, we will identify it. You could, you know, gang up on someone at the moment and go to police or lay a personal grievance about them, but it doesn't happen, you know. It's not happening. So I think that's very overblown, that whole false reporting witch hunt kind of thing.
If you come to Tika with a bogus story, and let's say you talk five friends into also entering into the system and a match is created, you will likely get legal advice, and the legal advice will be, I'm sorry, there are too many holes in your story.
It sounds very costly. We're talking about lawyers. We're talking about referrals. How much?
Yeah, it's we're working out exactly how much it will cost at the moment, and it also depends on how many clients register with us and how many matches we have and the timing around that. But we've got amazing support from Dentons New Zealand, which is a large commercial law firm, and they have come on board as our main kind of legal support partner. They're helping us with the setup of the charity, and we essentially want to set up a really good secondment program within the legal profession. So Dentons have kindly offered to be the first to provide some lawyers through that secondment program, and there's really strong interest so far in terms of people reaching out to me for other law firms to be involved in that. So what that means is the law firms themselves will continue to pay one or two lawyers' salaries. They second them over to Tika for 1 to 2 years' work for us, have hopefully a really positive experience of applying their legal skills in a law for good kind of way, and then go back to their firms. And so that's in the legal profession. And then there's also a big network called the Government Legal Network, which is public service lawyers. Lots of them are fantastic ex-Crown prosecutors. So we'd love to set up a partnership there where some of those lawyers could come and work for Tika. So this sounds great in practice, in theory, because it's essentially getting that really good legal advice for no cost to Tika. So we'll see how that works. It really just depends on the support that we get. But
That's the ideal, because we understand when people think, are my charity dollars going to pay lawyers? That's an understandable pain point, right? That's when some people go, well, whoa, hold on a minute. We are having to balance the fact that our survivors, our victim survivors, deserve quality legal advice. You know, if only for the reason that these are people who are often traumatised, and the last thing we want to do is re-traumatise them. You know, our system needs to be completely and firmly survivor-focused. But can we get those lawyers, those great lawyers, can we get them for free? If we can, that's what we're going to do. Charity fundraising, as we are very quickly beginning to understand, is a lot of paddling furiously under the water.
Are you looking for government funding or any kind of government support?
There is an argument to say that the government has a role here, and we do have a meeting on the books coming up shortly. That's probably all I can say about
right. That.
But we're hopeful that that there is some interest there, yeah. One of the really crucial parts of our relationship with police will be around those people who have done the incredibly brave thing and reported their assault or their harm to police and have not, for whatever reason, had their case taken forward. And normally it's the end of the road for a lot of people. We are hoping to have a pipeline between us and specialist police that can send those people back to Tika so they can then register with us and hopefully get a match. Once a group's been formed, it works in exactly the same way as for anybody else. They get another opportunity to take their case forward.
Because I was wondering about the police, what relationship you have with them and what kind of response you're getting from the police, because obviously it's crucial that you have quite a strong link.
Great to work with, I just want to say that.
We don't have a police-run online reporting system in Aotearoa, as Zoe said. They look, I think, with a little bit of envy across the Tasman, where New South Wales set up the sexual assault reporting online system. I know they are interested in the work that we're doing because they can see the value in a system like that, and they can see further value in Tika because, unlike the New South Wales system, we will be able to generate insights to what is happening in the area of sexual assault and sexual harm for them through anonymised, down the track, of course, through anonymised data, which shows them where the harm is happening and how many perpetrators are harming how many victim survivors. So
it does make me think, you know, New South Wales police have the SAROS.
The Sexual Assault Reporting Online Tool has been launched. We're launching today, online and live, which means that it's real time. No more forms.
Why don't we have that here? I mean, this is such a serious issue. It is hugely underreported. Is it not considered serious enough for the government or the police to put public money into it?
Yeah, I think it's they definitely regard it as a really serious issue. I mean, the statistics that they publish every year just show the huge prevalence of sexual harm and the huge underreporting. So I guess it's kind of resourcing, right? And the priorities that the government have might be taking away from resourcing that's needed in this space. So I guess in terms of the online reporting, they're quite two separate things, right? So police could at any time in New Zealand set up their own online reporting system, but they couldn't set up what we are doing with Tika because we are going to be an independent charity run by lawyers. As Ellie said, all the information is covered by legal privilege. So the clients can come to us and we can manage their information, match people, be a lot more creative and do things that police or a government agency can't do. So in terms of the matching, I think that's why they're so keen to have these discussions with us, because legally they just couldn't set it up. You know, a government agency can't give members of the public independent legal advice on whether to go to police, give them advice on the criminal process, the good and the bad things, and then also give them legal advice on the civil process, which there's very little awareness about in New Zealand. So it would be great for this government to really get behind this issue and really properly fund it, yeah.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by NZ On Air and RNZ. This episode was engineered by William Saunders and produced by Alexia Russell. Thanks to Ali Moore and Zoe Lawton. I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Ka kite.